Welcome to your weekend healthy chat. As always, I'm your host, Dr. Sarah, and today we have another great show lined up for you. We actually have a repeat guest back with us today who I'm very excited about. It's Kalila Borghini, who is a licensed clinical social worker and a certified anger management specialist and soon to be a certified domestic violence specialist. Did I get all that right?
Yes, you did. That's correct.
Good. So I know last time we talked a lot about anger management and we left off with a little bit about domestic violence. So I know that's where we wanted to start this show back up. But for our listeners who might have missed the first show, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you became interested in this type of work.
Well, I'm a psychotherapist in private practice, mm-hmm. and I had been doing traditional insight-oriented psychotherapy. I decided at one point that I really needed to keep up with the latest tools and techniques that people are using in treatment. So I started exploring things like cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, lots of DBT, mm-hmm. CBT, mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, and came across anger management as something that I thought would be really useful and different from what I had been doing, mm-hmm. because it's short-term and it's issue-focused.
Right.
And then through the anger management, it was suggested to me, because I have had some experience in my practice with it, that I pursue becoming a certified domestic violence specialist. The good news is there's a lot of work out there for me. The bad news is that there's
that
a lot
dealing,
of work out
right,
there.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's pretty much it.
So now, how is domestic violence defined in our court system?
Well, what I'd like to do is first define domestic violence and then talk a little bit about the court system, which
sure.
is a little bit more complicated.
No, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah. Domestic violence is a pattern of coercive tactics that can include physical, psychological, sexual, economic, and emotional abuse perpetrated by one person against an adult intimate partner, with the goal of establishing and maintaining power and control. So the operative words here are pattern, coercive tactics, include all of the physical, emotional, and psychological abuse, and its goal is establishing and maintaining power and control. So domestic violence occurs in all sorts of intimate relationships, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. including married couples, people who are dating, couples who live together, people with children in common, same-sex partners, people who were formerly in a relationship with the person abusing them, and teen dating relationships.
Absolutely. And it really can affect anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Legally, mm-hmm. domestic violence is a little bit more complicated, and I don't want to go into all of it, and I also am not an expert on all of it, but at this point, there's no specific crime of domestic violence in New York State. And it depends on who the victim is, who is the one who's perpetrating the the violence, and it also depends on what the relationship is of the victim to the abuser and where it's going to be addressed in the court system and how. Sounds complicated? It is. Domestic violence is handled both through the criminal courts and family courts as a family offense.
Mm.
So what gets tricky here is if you need, for example, an order of protection, if it involves children, that may have to go through the family court.
Right.
If it involves just adults, it may go through the criminal court.
Right.
Now,
right.
what's happened lately is that, from what I understand, many police departments use an expanded definition of family when making a mandatory arrest, for example. And this ends up providing greater protection to the victims who may fall outside of the New York State
traditional
definition.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's changed for the better in terms of protection. It, as I said, it's very complicated.
I think
you need a police.
We need to have a bigger show. A bigger show.
A legal person coming
an
in.
ADA, if you will.
Exactly, to really explain all of
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Now, speaking of domestic violence a little bit, now, is it a learned behavior or is there also a genetic component to it?
Well, I'd like to get away from the term behavior and genetic for a minute because, and talk more about that there's a certain type of personality.
Like a predisposition?
I wouldn't even call it that. I would say this is a person, a batterer, for example, who needs to control the other person. This is a psychologically very dependent but yet fearful of closeness person. Can't tolerate those feelings of dependency and intimacy. So these traits, this dependency and fear of closeness, are really the result of upbringing. What went wrong in those early years? Yes, environmental. It's the nurture rather than the nature. So I wouldn't call that genetic.
No.
But there are other factors that affect the behavior or the going into action, becoming a batterer.
Right.
And those are family history of violence, substance abuse, and mental illness.
Absolutely.
But, and this is a very big but, the most important predisposing factor in domestic violence are the cultural beliefs and attitudes towards women, which have nothing to do really with any sort of mental illness or anything other than it's our culture and our values and beliefs. So that domestic violence, when you really need to think of it, is a pattern of socially learned and culturally condoned coercive and controlling behavior.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot.
It is, absolutely. Now, if you're someone on the outside, what are some of the signs to pick up on that domestic violence might be occurring?
Okay.
Considering it's now a socially, you know, there's so much of a social aspect to
it. Right. Well, it depends on how outside you are. Domestic violence can show up in a lot of different ways. Being aware of them can help people who come across their coworkers, family members, and friends to identify someone who's being abused. So you have basically four categories of signs. One are the visible signs. They're the easy stuff. The bruises, the cuts, the injuries during pregnancy or even a miscarriage or premature birth.
Right.
It can also be delays in getting medical help for injuries. As I'm sure you're fully aware of all of this.
Yeah.
And a lot of injuries in different stages of healing.
Right.
So that indicates ongoing abuse. Someone who may be being physically abused might try to hide these injuries from other people. It might also be there for someone who suddenly starts wearing long sleeve shirts or turtlenecks or sunglasses indoors when they never did. So those are the more physical signs. Illnesses that may be related to abuse include stress-related illnesses such as a lot of headaches and backaches, constant pain, gastrointestinal disorders, insomnia, eating disorders, and fatigue. If you notice that somebody has changed, that you you're observing different types of changes, anxiety-related conditions like heart palpitations, difficulty breathing, and panic attacks.
Absolutely.
Depression, thinking about attempting suicide or alcohol or other drug problems, underneath it can be domestic violence occurring. In the workplace, the effects can be not being able to focus and concentrate at work, getting in late, asking for a lot of time off.
And these should all be red flags.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially if combined with some of the other signs that we're talking about.
On-the-job harassment by the abuser, that's pretty obvious, either in person or over the phone. Losing jobs and poor employment history. Behavior changes as well. Someone getting nervous or quiet or jumpy when they're around their partner. Someone you used to spend a lot of time with now never being able to available to do things with you.
Right.
Someone suddenly checking in with their partner a lot and getting calls or emails or text messages from their partner when they're not together. So all of those things combined or even in isolation can be a possible tip off.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That gives you a lot to think about.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And on that note, we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. We're here with Kalila Borghini, who's our licensed clinical social worker and certified anger management specialist and soon to be certified domestic violence specialist. And we just left off talking a little bit about what domestic violence is, what are some of the warning signs or things you mm-hmm. look for. So now, to change gears a little bit, let's talk about treatment. So what are some of the resources available to try to teach, I guess I know you don't like the word behavior, but maybe new behaviors, or how do you go about the treatment process?
Well, that's all relative to how severe the domestic violence is.
Right.
And if...
how willing they're about to get help.
Well, yes, because if it involves the legal system and the court system, that's a whole other...
another ball game.
That's
absolutely.
Another ball game.
Absolutely.
If someone comes in to me, recently I got a call from a gentleman who wanted couples counseling, and what he said over the phone was, and I have some anger management issues.
Ah, and so maybe like a red flag. Like,
well, it wasn't really a red flag. It was, oh, okay. So when I actually interviewed them, it turns out he was a batterer. So it was a domestic violence situation. Mm. So what I had to do a lot of thinking on my feet and
right.
a lot of very quick research, because research says that work with couples in a domestic violence situation can really make things worse.
Oh,
for the
really?
Victim. Yes, absolutely.
Huh.
So
why is that, if you don't mind?
Because
me.
Things are being disclosed in the couple session
right.
that the batterer doesn't necessarily want disclosed.
Oh, I
and
see.
Then
I see what you mean.
He or she can retaliate
take
after
it out
the,
on the
session is
after.
Over.
Mm-hmm.
So I had
like,
to
why
actually
did you say that? Kind
exactly.
Of? Yep.
And you
yep.
embarrass me.
Right.
And it is. Can be a bit
line.
Of a slippery slope.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what I had to do was find out some details about what had happened between the two of them and then assess whether or not I felt it was frequent and severe enough to suggest that he perhaps go to a batterer's program and she mm-hmm. get counseling,
right.
or if it was safe for me to work with the two of them. So that required an assessment,
mm-hmm.
family history of him, mm-hmm. family history of her, turned out to be a very complicated situation, and I am still working with him, where he has a history of substance abuse, mm. and he's been incarcerated,
right.
and he has battered in other relationships. So then I had to decide, okay, what do we do here? So mm-hmm. my plan, based on the information I was getting, was to work with them as a couple,
mm-hmm.
basically be on call 24/7, tell them that if anything came up that looked like it was escalating, that
right.
they needed to call me. We devised, and this is a very important part of working in the area of domestic violence, we devised a safety plan, because there were children involved. There was an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old. So safety plan involves, if there's a violent situation, the idea is to remove mm-hmm. oneself, the victim,
and the children. Right.
immediately and not engage. And also I had to talk to both of them about living in reality, that despite the batterer's desire to change, there's no guarantee that
right,
he would be able
right.
to stop it. For victims, there's counseling. Mm-hmm. Why is she or he in this relationship?
What's the gain?
And
right.
also, what's the bond between the two of them?
Mm-hmm.
And so for victims, it's counseling. And at this point, I do meet with her individually. And for batterers, for perpetrators, there's counseling, individual and group.
Hmm.
And also what's very important is it's called treatment for comorbid conditions, meaning things like addiction and mental illness, depression.
Right.
So I work on that with them. So I do a complete intake. We establish safety first, a plan. I have to make sure that there's a connection with them. I teach them tools if there's an escalation in an argument, for example, which borrows some things from mm-hmm. anger management. I also have to explain my role as a mandated reporter, which you know what that's about.
Oh, absolutely.
If there are children involved and if they have to tell me everything that happens. This right, is the right. This is the paradox. But if they tell me something that I feel the children are at risk, then I have to report them to Children's Services.
Absolutely.
So I tell them that. I don't want to blindside you with this information.
But I have to be up
front. But I have to be up front. So that's another incentive not to let this happen. I also draw on the client's strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there are strengths. And sometimes it's very easy to get lost in what's wrong. And I also, and this is very, very important, that makes anger management and domestic violence work very different.
Mm-hmm.
We discuss and explore the social, cultural, and societal aspects of domestic violence. And we explore attitudes of women about themselves and the attitudes of the male about women and what has been internalized and what may be being acted out.
Yeah.
In the relationship that the batterer feels is perfectly acceptable.
Right.
Yeah. So that's basically how I would work with
somebody. It seems
very
in-depth.
It has to be.
It does. Absolutely. Now, do you have any tips for our listeners if they recognize whether it's possible domestic violence either within their own families or within others that they might know in the community? Any tips for that before we...
Well, I'd like to draw attention to a website. Let me just find the link here, which has... And much of the information that I've given today, I've either double-checked or taken from the website.
Uh-huh.
Which is, I could probably cite it from memory, but it's when you're looking for something, you can never find it. It's the New York State Department of Prevention. It's the state's PDV, Prevent
Domestic
Violence. And I believe it's .com. That's a place for, here we go. Yes. It's opdv.ny.gov. Mm. It's the Office of the Prevention of Domestic Violence. It's the state's very comprehensive website that talks about all the different aspects of domestic violence. Anyone who suspects domestic violence should take a look.
Mm.
If someone suspects domestic violence in someone that they feel comfortable enough speaking to, he or she should be very supportive, very tactful, very helpful. Here's a place you can go to get help.
Right.
Non-judgmental. And support the person in a way that isn't conditional. I'll help you if you leave this jerk. That's not helpful.
Yeah, that is not helpful.
That does not even seem
supportive, really.
Or how can you do this? You've got children.
Yeah, you cannot make it into a negative.
No.
Right, I completely agree.
But to be as helpful and supportive, encouraging, saying that the person really can get the help that he or she needs,
absolutely,
express concern,
mm-hmm,
listen and validate.
Show them that you're there for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Support the person's decisions. But on the other hand, don't wait for the person to come to you because people have a lot of shame about domestic violence. Don't judge or blame. Don't pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've given the help, don't give advice. And as I said, don't put conditions on your support. I'll be there for you as long as you get away from this.
Yeah, no, that's not a good thing.
It'll
backfire.
Yeah.
Right.
If there are children involved and you either witness or suspect that they are being physically or severely emotionally harmed by this, then you really do need to call Children's Services.
Absolutely. And
anonymously.
That's the same advice I give.
Anonymously.
Absolutely.
You don't have to give your name, and you may feel really guilty about doing it, but in the long run, you may save
a life. Absolutely.
And you, at the very least, will save a child from being, or children from being, traumatized.
Yeah, I truly believe if you see something, you need to say something.
It's the same thing. Exactly.
Absolutely. Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
So thank you for coming back. And
you're
for our listeners,
welcome.
If somebody wanted to reach out to you, how would they do that?
Well, I have a website, which is childofthestones.com. That's one word. Once again, childofthestones.com. If you key my name in on Google, I come up all over the place, so you'll find it. And I also have email, which is Kalila, K-A-L-I-L-A, at childofthestones.com. And I have a phone, which is 212-362-2691.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us again.
Welcome.
Always a pleasure.
You're quite welcome.
And on that note, we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. Now it's time in our show for our email question of the week. And this mom writes, "Good morning, Dr. Sarah. I'm the mom of a five-month-old little girl, and with it now being summer, we have a beach vacation scheduled for next week. When buying sunscreen, however, everything says not to use if under 6 months of age. What do you suggest?" Well, summer is definitely in full swing. And it's kind of funny you bring up this question, as a colleague and I were actually discussing the same thing on the beach this weekend. First and foremost, when going outside with your little one, try to keep him or her as covered as possible. Now, what does that mean? So when you're in the sun, you want to make sure she has on a hat, a long-sleeved rash guard, a shirt, bathing suit, the whole nine. When not in the water, whether it's the ocean, the pool, you know, when not in the water, an umbrella or an infant tent is essential to shield from the sun's rays. As for sunscreen, although it says not to use until after 6 months, I'd advise a hypoallergenic, because being under the age of one, all little ones' skins are very sensitive. So a hypoallergenic sunscreen with an SPF of 60 or higher, especially if being in the sun for extended periods of time. And don't forget, reapply often. But keep in mind, regardless of sunscreen, she needs to be covered as much as possible at all times to avoid sunburn. I hope this helps answer your question, and I hope you enjoy your beach vacation. For those of you with further email questions, please feel free to email me. It's drsarah@middletownchc.org. Again, it's drsarah@middletownchc.org. I'd like to thank our guest, Kalila, for being here with us today and discussing the utmost important topic of domestic violence. So thank you again. And for those of you, for those listeners out there, I'd like to wish you a happy and healthy week ahead, and I'll see you again next time. Take care.